That's J.J. Johnson on trombone leading the J.J. Johnson Quintet with Bagg's Groove. Nat Adderley on cornet, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Wilbur Little on bass, and Albert Heath of the famous Heath Brothers on drums. This was recorded on August 29, 1958. See what happens when you do a good job the first time around. It lasts. It certainly does. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And two things I'd like to touch on today. But before we get to that, I hope you had a good holiday, many of you who celebrate Christmas. I don't, but many of you do. I used to like it when I was a kid, and then I grew up, and I learned a lot of things that made me say, this is not a holiday for me. So I opted out very early in the game. It was very distressing to my parents because I didn't have the same sense of wonder, and you know, I didn't go there on Christmas, but I did enjoy helping my mother prepare all these dishes and delicacies. Now that I enjoyed. So I hope you had, those of you celebrating, I hope you had a peaceful and contemplative Christmas, and that you manage in the middle of all of that to get your brain in gear, to not panic, to stay calm. Also, today is the first day of, I would say, a modern holiday called Kwanzaa. Today is the first day of Kwanzaa, which is a week's worth of celebration of African and African-American culture. There's another holiday that I don't get excited about. And I put it all on the late Dr. John Henrik Clark, who insisted that we keep perspective, and it's not a holiday. It is, it's nice that it was organized to consolidate and to commemorate and to celebrate African culture, but he had major trouble with it as a holiday, although he recognized the intention. But he was not one to legitimize the holiday. He was not. And I've kind of grown to appreciate his arguments. On the one hand, when people are oppressed, anything that helps them out of that oppression, anything that contributes to a sense of self, helps. But we had a period there, and it's still ongoing, where people are kind of inventing things that are not directly based in our history, but our history becomes a pivotal organizing point to achieve the same goal of consolidating and of identification of our culture and celebrating our culture. So for that reason, it serves a very important purpose. But This was what Dr. Clark used to argue. Even so, people should be very careful to delineate what is actually history from what is meant to use history to achieve other things, which are well-intentioned, I'm sure. But at the same time, we get confused. We get confused. We think it is history, and it's not. So I know I'll get a lot of phone calls. I'll get a lot of notes saying, what are you saying? Well, just think about it. And it's just my point of view. I don't impose the view on anybody. But I do agree with the late Dr. John Henrik Clark, who I knew personally for many, many years, and whose work I had helped to edit. I so respect this man. And I think there's reason to re-inspect his position, that we shouldn't be confused between history, what is history, and what is an effort to integrate our history into concepts that are meant to galvanize us and to consolidate us, but they're not the same. Okay, so two stories, if we could get to them today. I want to talk about a late-breaking story that the young man, 14-year-old boy, who was implicated in the stabbing death of a Barnard College freshman as she walked through the park near the school. And this is in the park in Harlem. A park in Harlem. And she allegedly was walking through the park, and this young boy, 14 years old, and two others in around the same age range, allegedly attacked her, one of them pulling out a knife and stabbing her to death. And initially, of the three who were said to have attacked her, the police rounded up two, and the last one was identified yesterday. They located him yesterday. Okay. It's not a nice story. But it has, you know, it has some dimensions to it that are very important not to miss. Because we find ourselves in the midst of the same story over and over and over again. Okay, we cannot argue that this was a heinous crime. It was uncalled for, unnecessary, and just downright demonic that three young boys of that age range would do something, or allegedly do something like this. So here's the story as is reported, and has been reported. Since this occurred, and that was what, December 11th in Morningside Park, we have seen dimensions of it that should trouble us. Okay. This young lady, Her name is Tessa Majors, a student at Barnard College, which is part of the complex with Columbia University. It's right next door. The buildings are next door to each other. Decided, or at least what we get as information, is that she went for a walk around 7 o'clock that night on December 11th. And it was through Morningside Park, which is Barnard and Columbia University on one side is adjoining Morningside Park. The park actually slopes down a hill and then flattens out at the bottom. It's not a big park, but it's a famous park. And it fell into almost a irretrievable despair and disrepair years ago, because this park was a focal point in the neighborhood for drug use, drug sales, drug transactions, and it attracted unsavory elements that the neighborhood as a whole objected to having their presence in the area. It took years. It took almost two decades, in fact, for the people to actually get a response from the police department, from the community board, from other agencies that typically would be partners with the community in dealing with the problem. They just ignored it. So it became untenable for people who had lived there for a long time. It was a well-regarded neighborhood, and people were very proud to keep it that way. But they were overwhelmed by the other forces invading the community. So it took a long time, I'd say 20 years, of consistent pressure to get the forces moving to clean up the park, to make it safe, to encourage the neighborhood once again to be proud of this little park. It isn't at maximum yet, but it is considerably better. It's considerably improved from the old days, where it was just a hellhole and anything, you know, anything went. Anything people wanted to do. But it was known as a major drug culture park for users and buyers and even victims. Okay, so the report that we are getting from all over, the report that we got, as you recall, because I talked about it, was that this murder occurred in the park. The young woman, 18 years old, was identified as Tessa Majors. And she was not a resident of the area, but she had went to Barnard. So technically she was a resident of the area. She was white. And as a student of Barnard, enjoyed the status of Barnard College, which is an all-women's college. Okay, From the very beginning, we learned about the three boys who the police held accountable for her death. This wasn't just a death, this was a vicious attack that ended in her murder. They decided that although they had two of the three supposed participants in this murder, one was missing, and according to the two others, the one who was missing was the one who actually pulled the knife out and stabbed her to death. And he was 14. An all points bulletin went out. The neighborhood was well apprised of what had happened, and people were very upset about this. But I'm concentrating on how this was reported and how it reflects a deeply racist attitude that we still have not been able to overcome, not within the ranks of the police, not within the newsrooms of New York. Okay. Now, I wasn't there. I followed the story after the fact, like most everybody. But there is something deeply resonating with me on this question. And it has to do with the extraordinary difference between the way the boys are covered and the way the victim of this murder, Tessa Majors, was covered and still is being covered. And the attitude of law enforcement and the media shaping the story, so that we come to understand that there's only one way to see it. These black boys, hoodlums that they are, attacked a lone woman walking in a park for no reason and murdered her. And there's nothing more to know. Okay. I say there is a lot more to know. Well, I'm a reporter too. I would never have come to that conclusion that quickly. I would want to know some details. The first thing I would want to know, after it has been established that she was murdered, I would want to know how she came to be in the park by herself, walking in the park, according to police, at 7 o'clock at night. What was she doing there at that time, by herself? Was she that naive? Was she oblivious to the potential danger she put herself in? As a student at Barnard, was she not apprised, as most students, I would surmise, would have been, about the dangers or potential dangers of that particular area and to steer clear of it? After all, there was a guard stationed in one of those security huts just taking care of the security in the immediate area. At least this is what she would have learned. So it wasn't a safe park. And yet she's there at 7 o'clock at night. And this is winter when it gets dark even earlier. So that raised questions in my head. What are you doing there? The reports say nothing about this. The reports have nothing to say about how she got to be there. What was she doing in that area at that time? The only information we have, and this is regardless of the source of information, right? They're all reporting exactly the same thing. She was walking through the park at 7 o'clock at night, and then these thugs overwhelm her and stab her to death. One of them, anyway. They got two out of three, but the one who was missing up until yesterday, the one who was missing supposedly was the one who did the cruel deed. Okay, I'm not buying that. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm just saying, let us have some straight reporting. I would never, as a person who trained reporters, I would never let somebody come back to me with a story that is missing very important facts. This is a very important fact. This is a very important question. What was she doing there at that time by herself? And it's not about blaming the victim. That's not it at all. It's about ascertaining all of the facts and letting the facts fall wherever they need to fall. Now, since we haven't been told, and since nobody's explaining this one central question, which in my view is central to the issue of her murder, it will fill out a lot, and it will help us understand this circumstance much better. You can't leave it that, you know, she was just walking through the park and these thugs descended on her and one of them pulls a knife and stabs her several times, and she dies. Well, what can we, where can we go with this? How did you end up in this park? If you are a student at Barnard, it should be assumed that you've been told that it's not a good place to be caught by yourself, especially as evening falls. My theory is that she was eager to have, for her, a very nice and mellow week. A weekend, you know, final exams are about to begin. People are trying to get their papers together and whatnot. They're studying really hard. She supposedly had a roommate, but the roommate might have gone for the weekend. So she had the place to herself. And this was a good time to mellow out, like many college students do. And by mellowing out, I mean They go to get their stash, replenish their stash, so that they don't have to run out every 2 hours to get their pot or whatever it is they're taking to mellow out. She obviously knew where to go, indicating, in my view, that this was not her first time going there. To that area. And so she was not afraid. She had probably gone there enough times to get a sense that it's not as dangerous as people are saying. Oh, I could handle it. So she went there by herself in order to replenish her stash. This is what I think. My reporter's hunch tells me this is what happened. So she gets there. She apparently might have even completed the transaction with these guys. I don't know that I could say she had met them before, had done business with them before. But in any event, there was a transaction, I believe. And after the transaction, when she is ready to head back up the hill to her dorm room at Barnard, a thought crossed the mind of these three predators. If she had money to do this transaction, maybe she has more. Maybe she has more money. And maybe she has other things that are worth money. Maybe she has a necklace. Maybe she has a ring. Maybe she has other valuables that could bring money, such as a credit card. So even though she came and we did this transaction, and we should, you know, this is the end of things. She goes her way and we go our way. The thought might have occurred to these kids, hey, there's an opportunity here to see if we could make more of this than we already have. So they proceed. As a group, they proceed on that premise. We're going to see whether she has anything more that she can offer us or that we can have from her. As they do that, she begins to resist. She begins to fight back. She begins to put up her guard. But still, she's alone. And none of the boys of the group, none of them said, okay, leave her alone. Nobody interceded. Nobody put forth an idea that, okay, they've gotten enough, let's break it up. Because she knows there's supposed to be a security guard at the steps. He would be in his security station just where the steps are so that you can go up to the level of Columbia University in Barnard. She's severely wounded. In fact, she's dying. She's bleeding out. They have already taken her money back. They have already taken whatever drugs she might have bought back. And they're looking for more, but some idiot decided that he's not going to put up with this, anybody fighting him, because he's got a knife. Well, he knows there's a knife here. She gets to the guard hut, and the guard isn't in it. He must be on a bathroom break or patrolling some other area adjacent to where this event occurred, this attack occurred. But he is not there, not at that moment. So she tries with all of her might to climb the stairs. She just wants somebody to see her and help her. It didn't happen. She bled out and she died. That, to me, is the more likely scenario. Don't tell me she went for a walk in the park. She was on a mission. Like many students from Barnard and Columbia University, they come down the stairs and into the park, and they do their business. And then they go back up the stairs, and they're back in their Ivy League schools. That, to me, is the scenario. Now, what happens after that? I myself commented about the fact that it took a while for the police to round up these individuals who allegedly committed this dastardly deed. That was a sign that the community is not in order. There's no way a community could be in order when three thugs said to be belonging to a neighborhood cannot be found, and they get away, although temporarily, but they get away with committing a murder and nobody knows where they are. They haven't been caught. It is a signal that all of the progress made with regard to Morningside Park just does not exist. It's a fiction. It's a figment of somebody's imagination that things have improved. No, the drug sales are still going on. But you see, it's not reported because most of the people doing the drug buying are coming from, you guessed it, Columbia University and Barnard. And you can't have Columbia University and Barnard being implicated in such a nasty situation, because it tarnishes their reputation. They are Ivy League schools, after all. So you focus on the thugs. It is to be expected that they committed crimes, and serious crimes, because that's what they do. They're black men, black young men. So you can have a field day focusing on them. You do not discuss, you do not even raise the question, what was this woman doing in the park by herself at 7 o'clock at night, a park well known historically as a drug mecca, and you're still not mentioning, you're not even giving credence to the idea that she went to score some drugs. And then this whole thing happened, spun out of control, and next thing you know, she's dead. There will be no tarnishing of her name. There will be no tarnishing of the name and reputation of Barnard College and Columbia University. Because there's where the children of well-to-do whites, that's where they go. Oh yes, they, you know, they may smoke pot, they may take other kinds of drugs and so forth. It happens on all college campuses. And there's that attitude about it. But presented the way I am presenting it, you cannot sever her presence or what impelled her presence in that park at that time of night. You cannot sever it from the murder itself. It's all part of the same thing. It is not a good and pretty picture. It is not something you would want to happen to your daughter. But this is, in my view, these are the missing facts of the case. And therefore, it changes the entire case. We are no longer concerned about the whole case. It is sufficient only that we can conclude, based on information supplied by the media, by the police, that this is yet another dimension of black life and how black people live their black lives. This is what they do. She has been totally cleansed. Barnard has been totally cleansed. Columbia University has been totally cleansed. There is no relevant context here for the story. And that is important. That is, in fact, the story. That in their own way, these white students from up the hill are traversing the racial divide because they're connected to the other side by drugs. That's the story. They can overcome their, you know, their prejudices, and they regularly do because the trade is brisk. And it is Harlem's best kept secret. They don't have time to be enmeshed in racial divisions and racial issues. They traverse these things every day. They do commerce with each other every day. And in the moment that they connect, they are equal. One buys, the other supplies. They have no problem. So when they deny this aspect, which is an unavoidable truth in my view, not only are they betraying their roles as reporters and journalists, they are also perpetuating myths. Again, nobody in their right mind would find that this woman's brutal death was befitting her. Nobody would say, well, she came to an end that she should have expected. It's not being said, and it shouldn't be said. I'm saying this to point out to you how our perceptions, our realities, are deliberately distorted so as to achieve the standing order, which is you do not show white people, especially white women, in a less than wonderful light. It could never be the case that this young lady went down the hill, because that's where most of the students would go to get their drugs. And she was one of them. They would never say something like that. It would never even be put out as if that was even a remote possibility. It just is dismissed, it's wiped off, it's not up for discussion. Don't ask about it. And yet, everything tells me that these are the essential questions in this case. These are the essential questions. And life goes on. They've done a good job. All the media people have followed the same order to just completely expunge any blame from her. I'm not using the word blame in the sense that, I'm talking about responsibility. How people, whether wittingly or unwittingly, can find themselves in the middle of their own tragedy. We're talking about the contact, the racial contact. They're okay. The students up on the hill, they come down every day to buy their drugs. This is not news. I talked to someone I know who lives smack dab in the middle of all of this. He's a reporter too. He says, the question that you just asked me, nobody wants to deal with it. Because that is the day-to-day reality of life in that community, reflecting the day-to-day reality of life in America. Separate and unequal. I'll take a break here. Obviously, I'm not going to get to my second subject. I'll do that tomorrow. But I'll take a break here and take your questions and comments at 888-874-4888. Now you understand why I say what I say with regard to this case. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and I just laid out my version based on my experience as a reporter on what's missing from this account. of the murder in Harlem, in this Harlem park, of this Barnard student. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Hello, you're on the air.
Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Hi, Patrice John from Jersey. The only thing I can say about your commentary is bingo. Bingo. That is the question that should be answered. I'm sure it should be asked. I'm sure it's been asked within everyone's mind, all the police, all the detectives, anyone who has half a brain is saying, what the heck was she doing there? And that's probably exactly what she was doing. I mean, after all, she's a musician. She's people in that way of life, artists, what have you, have a tendency to dabble in I don't want to call it narcotics.
No, she doesn't have to be a music student. She just has to be
a
student in that environment. That's what a lot of students do.
Oh, I'm well aware of that. Well, young people in general sometimes just that's what they do, just so they can have that life experience. Hopefully, it doesn't lead to their demise the way it did with this young woman's demise. It's a shame. It's a shame that the circumstances in the country...
And here, too, by the way, I'm sorry to cut you off that way, but it just occurred to me that also has to be factored in to what happened right after that. Everybody tells you, including the police, don't fight. Don't fight back. Don't resist.
Just give it up.
Just give it up, and you might save your life by doing that. But she resisted. She fought back. And that might have sent things over the edge. Again, I don't intend that this be interpreted as me blaming her. I'm saying these are some of the things that have to be considered. What precipitated, it is unusual that in a scenario like this, somebody would just pull a knife and stab you after they have gotten your money, you made a purchase, let's say, and there's no reason to be brutal. It is unusual that would happen. So what precipitated this violence?
Escalation.
Right.
Escalation.
So
I heard one report that they said that she had bit one of the assailants.
Yes, the police
and,
did
validate. It was the guy with the knife. The next thing you know, he's pulling a knife and stabbing her for having bit him. So, she got herself into a predicament that, is very unfortunately, particularly for her and the three young men who were involved.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family. Well, first of all, you were not the first person to report this because, in fact, about 2 days after her death, the NYPD said that. And when the NYPD said that, the family from Virginia excoriated the police department for even making that comment. And we never heard about it again. They made the comment for one day. They were rebuffed by the family, and it was never followed up, and no further comment has ever been made. That I live literally 16 blocks south of where that occurred. I know that park and that location extremely well. And actually, this was going to be my Free Your Mind comment on Friday, because since her death, I drive up and down Morningside Drive, which is parallel to the park. And from 112th Street, for people who don't know that park, don't live in New York, the park starts around 110th Street and goes all the way up to 123rd Street, a total of about 13 blocks. The park is expansive. Since her death, there has been a police presence from 112th Street to 123rd Street, which means I have never, ever, I have lived here for 46 years, I have never seen such a heavy police presence in that park. That is a route that I know extremely well. And it has really incensed me, because every time I have seen that heavy police presence, what that conveys to you is, the kids up the hill, because the park literally is the dividing line between the haves and the have-nots. On the top of the hill, you've got Columbia and Barnard. As on the other side of the park is the community that is literally undergoing gentrification. And so that's a part of this. Because Columbia students have always been known to go down the hill to the other side of the park where those people lived, and where those people had the drugs. So this is everything, this whole confluence of the haves and the have-nots, the gentrification and those privileged students. Who has a right to be protected and who doesn't have a right to be protected? Because I can tell you, in the 46 years that I've lived here, I have never seen such protection as I see now. And I'm livid.
Oh.
So the police did say it for all of a day. The police, the NYPD, did say that she was on a marijuana mission. They did.
Oh, they did.
But the family was so incensed. It went for one day, and that was it.
I had no idea that the police said she was on a marijuana mission.
They did.
I was just operating on my instinct as a reporter. This is probably, or more than likely, what brought her down the hill at 7 o'clock at night.
I just wanted to confirm to you that what you're speculating is correct, because NYPD said that.
All right. What do you think of the absence of any such commentary or coverage in the media? Even though they're constantly updating this case and telling people they're looking for this one and they're looking for that one, and now the most recent that they found the actual stabber.
The only press who would probably go into that terrain is the black press, and as you know, the black press no longer exists. Which is why you need to come back. Hint, hint. But you know, we don't have an unbiased press, and her persona must be protected and sanitized and cleansed and maintained pristine at all costs, and that's what this is about.
Wow. You see, and only when you stop and you take a little bit of time to put in your own mind the things that you know together, you come up with an entirely different picture. And this is what I tell people all the time. Don't react in the heat of it. Just stay back for a minute and put the pieces together, and you see they're not fitting. You can't tell me a white woman by herself, 7 o'clock at night, goes down to a park that has a certain reputation, and you're comfortable with that decision. Something is wrong.
I don't know if you remember, it was either the late 60s or early 70s, one of the Kennedy boys, as a matter of fact, literally five blocks from where this occurred, on 116th Street between Manhattan Avenue and Morningside Drive, OD'd in the vestibule of
yes.
one of those buildings. We have always known that this is where they came to buy their drugs.
All right. So I think we have a different perspective, at least for people to just keep it in mind that there are other dimensions to this that are deliberately being distorted or erased completely so as to maintain the status quo. that a white woman, no matter what she does, or a white man, no matter what he does, still gets the benefit automatically of a layer of protection against, you know, the facts. They don't have to deal with the facts. The situation would be that the media outlets will take care of that by omission or by distortion. Thanks, Patricia, for your call.
Thank you.
Well, this brings us to the end of our program today. I couldn't stand it anymore because, as I said, I'm a reporter. I've been a reporter for a long time. You cannot present the facts to me as they have presented them to the major media up there in New York and think that that's supposed to be the end of it. You can't do that, not with my brain, not with my experience. And I say that to say that my brain and experience are like the brains and experience of most people living in the neighborhood. They know, automatically they know, but they're not talked to, they're not consulted. They're not given credence at all. And yet this stands officially as the record. This is the record. And it is the record not only of a murder in the park, but the extended record of relations between blacks and whites, rich and poor, of a whole bunch of other things. This is going to stand as the record. But thankfully, we discussed a bit of it today and encourage you to say, well, I need to take another look at this. We'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. See you then. Thank you.